Today is Monday, February 20th, 2023. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Scott Imsland. Scott spells his last name I-M-S-L-A-N-D. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Scott. How are you today?
All's well. I'm sitting in the sunshine and it's a great day.
It sounds lovely. Scott, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Scott, what year were you born?
1950.
And where were you born?
I was actually born in Lodi, but I was raised in Sacramento, California.
Okay. How'd your folks meet each other?
It was after the war, and there were, in Sacramento, there were whatever the dance halls were that got people from the war and soldiers and WACs and all that stuff.
Oh, the VFW?
Yeah, the VFW.
Okay.
So that's where they met, and they...
Had they both been in the service?
No, but my dad, of course, is World War II, so he was a... He was ultimately a pharmacist, and I think he kind of worked in America. He didn't go overseas or anything like that, but they needed him to do something in the West Coast area. So he didn't have to go to war, but he was some part of a mechanical or machine shop kind of thing. Whatever they needed, he was put in.
Hang on a second. Let me make sure. I'm going to back up and clarify this. So your dad was a pharmacist before the war?
No, not before, but right when he was released, that's when he went to school in Oregon and got his degree in pharmacy, and that's how he supported the family, and that's where I worked early days. But yeah, they met at the dance hall after he was released from the Army, and she was not a part of all that, I don't know what she ended up doing throughout the war, or was she conscripted into something? I'm not sure.
Okay. And your dad never went overseas, but
no.
Which service unit did he work in?
All I can recollect from what he said about his practice there was that where I made my living in Flagstaff and abroad was as a machinist, because I went to school, and that'll come up later in our talks. But he said, yeah, I worked as a machinist in the war. And I don't know where he ended up doing his service, but that's where they put him. And it really surprised me, because he wasn't particularly mechanical, but that's where he kind of liked it. And that's where they put him.
Was he in the Army or the Air Force for that?
Yeah. Army.
Army. Okay. And where did he grow up?
My grandfather came from Norway, and I presume he came from Imsland, Norway, and he and his brothers came in the mid-teens, 1914, 15, something like that.
Okay.
It was a big migration time, and they came over to Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and so the families from the Scandinavian countries, they liked that cold conditions, and that's where they ended up going, and that's where he did.
Okay.
He lived on a farm, and depression was rough, and they didn't have much food, and that carried with him and other people that immigrated and were in the depression. There wasn't food much, and it was hard.
Right.
And they lived in these cold areas, so they were tough.
So when your dad went into the service, was that was that the first time he was exposed then to California?
After the service, that would have been his first time. And I don't know if he ended up going out to California because the family couldn't all be fed with all the brothers and sisters that were there.
Hmm.
I don't think he was kicked out, but he got the GI Bill to go to school. And
right.
I think that's when he ended up going west.
Okay. And you mentioned you grew up in Sacramento, born in Lodi. Your folks clearly liked that country then and settled there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Sacramento was a big deal. And it was a big town, and it was certainly during the gold rush, the remnants of all that and the paddle wheeler boats that would come in and bring goods and so forth and take people down the Sacramento American River to wherever they needed to go, I suppose. Okay. But, yeah, it was, Sacramento was, and there's a lot of air bases and stuff. There's a lot going on. It was a good place, I'm sure, to do it all, you know. There was a lot happening in Sacramento at that time.
So, any other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, they're all dead, except for my sister.
So they were older? Older than you?
Yeah. Yeah. My sister is younger than me, but by a few years, and she's alive and well. And the other two passed away.
Okay. All right. So what was growing up in Sacramento like?
It was great. That's where I graduated from high school, and that's where some very important people in my river life were at in high school with. That was Mark and Gary Dubois, who were part of the Save the Stanislaus from the dam that got put in there. And they are, I went to school with those guys, and they're the ones that actually got me into river running.
Is that D-U-B-O-U-I-S?
Yeah, Dubois, Mark Dubois, and Gary Dubois, D-O-I-S. Yeah, and they were...
did they live near you? Did they live... Were they neighbors?
Close. They weren't quite neighbors, but they were bicycle distance.
Okay.
And,
same age?
And yeah, Gary was my age, and Mark was a little bit older. He, if I was a sophomore, he would have been nearly a senior in high school by then.
Okay.
And then... And then...
so before, hang on, we're going to back up a little bit here.
Go ahead.
Before high school, in grade school, your dad's got a job as a pharmacist, it sounds like,
right.
in a pharmacy school. I'm assuming, was your mom a homemaker?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
With
that period
brothers and sisters.
Time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That was common.
And then, would you guys go on vacations, sort of summer vacations? Okay. Where'd you go? What'd you do?
We would go up to Camp Sacramento, which was a part of the city or a county of Sacramento, and it was a great place up Highway 50. You probably don't know all these areas here, but Highway 50 is the way to get up to the Sierras and over into Lake Tahoe and the gambling casinos and all that stuff.
But, okay.
And there were a lot of different Boy Scout camps and other camps up there in the mountains. Before you hit the summit and drop over into Lake Tahoe. But, yeah, the family would go and go to what's called Camp Sacramento, where we have cabins, and they had a cafeteria kind of thing and a lodge where music would be, and people would dance and play cards, and there was ping pong tables and just typical camp stuff, and that was supported by the city of Sacramento, and that's where we spent our vacations.
Okay. Summertime, I'm assuming. And again, Sacramento,
yeah,
did you get up to Yosemite?
When I was in high school and later, yes, Yosemite,
okay.
But not as far as the family. That, you know, that wasn't on the radar.
Not in grade school?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
That was more when I was leaving high school and into college that we would go up to Yosemite.
Okay.
And
so did you get
out
of California? Did you, you know, like go back to visit grandparents, you know, back in the Dakotas?
I never did. I missed that. I was young, and I opted to go to... my mom wanted to go down south and visit her family, and so I decided not to go back to either South or North Dakota. I decided that I wasn't going to take that car trip there, and I was really young, so I just decided I was going to stay with mom and go to Disneyland, which had just opened.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it just literally opened, and not knowing what I was missing by not going back east, because I could have met my grandfather and seen the whole deal. That was something that I regret never having gotten to do.
Then I should ask you, what was Disneyland like the first time you were there?
And the only time. And I told my kids, if you've got friends and family that want to go to Disneyland, I'll pay for everything, because you'll never get me into Disneyland ever.
Okay.
And And I don't think they ever really cared about going to Disneyland. And so that didn't happen. But Disneyland, in that period, I remember the Jungle Ride. I remember seeing Abraham Lincoln talking. And that was like, you know, IT kind of big deal thing to go and watch this mechanical Abe Lincoln talk. That was a memory that I recall. And I go, God, this is so modern. And, you know, I wasn't more than 5 years old, probably at the most six.
So this would be 1955, 1956?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, 55, 6, something okay. like that, yeah. And, yeah, Disneyland was, it wasn't that crowded. I remember the various rides through the jungle kind of stuff and ponds and so forth. And that, it was just, it wasn't like it wasn't developed. It was developed. They didn't open it kind of like haphazard. It was pretty much ready to go in 55.
Okay.
And, so I think I went on some rides, yeah. And it had just started, so it wasn't like now where it's really packed, I suppose, down there, and it's just a zoo completely. It wasn't quite like that. I didn't remember it like that. It's just
right. Well, the population, population was a half or a third of what it is now. So.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And the idea of going to a resort, park like that kind of thing going, that was like, what the heck is that? It's kind of like river running. What the hell you were doing? What with boats on where?
Right.
You
what?
It's kind of like, yeah, it was like that. What?
And then did you get into scouts?
Oh, I was Eagle Scout. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in the whole family. My dad was very, committed to having us all, go through scouting, and it was good. It got me into a lot of really cool places.
Were your folks scoutmasters at all?
No, but my dad helped in all the various levels, and he went and helped in all the camping trips and all the gatherings that we'd have to learn knots and campfire building and all the positive parts of. There's a lot of positive at scouting,
yeah.
And a lot of treat your neighbors well and help people and all this other stuff and do good deeds and so forth.
And you would have been that in grade school then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Yeah. Through grade school, through just the beginnings of high school. And that's when I finally got Eagle Scout, and that was the end of that.
Okay. Where would you go for your scouting adventures?
Oh, Camp Harvey West. This is all up in the Sierras. So
okay.
Camp Harvey West, which I'm not sure is still there. Another lake we'd go to is Loon Lake. And then there was a lot of ranches outside of Sacramento that we would... Van Fleck Ranch was one we would go to.
How do you spell that?
Van Fleck, as in F-L-E-C-K, I imagine.
Okay.
Van Fleck.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that, I think, eventually became a county... Presently, instead of a ranch with cows and ponds and all this stuff going on, I think now it's just a off-road vehicle park of some nature or whatever. I'm not sure. But anyway, at that time, it was a ranch, and the people were kind enough or into scouting enough that a few different times they put the big jamborees up there. And
oh, wow.
We would go up there and camp there. And yeah, there was a lot of activity. I think it's a lot different now. Scouting and the will of the people to allow people to camp and do stuff with the scouting. And back then it was very common to have a lot of area available. You know, if a scout master goes, oh, I know him from the war. I'm just making this up. But,
right.
You know, or whatever, you know. Oh,
connections.
I play baseball. You know, all these connections. I'll talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in lots of different places that were... You know, and if you're in a scouting, you never got an end to these areas, so it was really cool.
Right. And did you get into the eastern slopes of the Sierra and the deserts out there?
No, not at all. That once you hit the summit in Lake Tahoe area and the ski resorts, it wasn't common to go over the mountains and head towards Nevada at that time.
Okay.
That wasn't something of any interest, really. But I've got friends currently that, yeah, maybe we should have gone over there and explored, but we never did.
Right.
We never got there.
Okay. You also mentioned skiing. Is that something that your folks were into that got you into?
No, it was my friends that skied, and mom and dad had no, none of the family was interested in that at all. And then, but my friends would be, okay. And so we would hitchhike up to the various resorts, and from Sacramento, and
this is in high school.
This is high school, yeah, high school. So we would we had heard that if you go to Boreal Ridge Ski Resort. And you go and say you want to get some lodging, food, meals, and tickets, and we'll work in the rental department, giving out shoes and skis and all that stuff. So we said, that sounds great. We'll just go get us dropped off at the freeway out of Sacramento, and then we'd hitchhike up to the mountains. And then we'd make that connection, and they would say, okay, you can start now or whatever. Here's your food tickets. This is the lodging that all the workers get to stay in, and on and on and on. So it worked out to be really good. You get lift tickets, and you could ski all day. Then you could ski Sunday and go into the parking lots and tap on windows or see people that were getting ready to leave and ask them if they could take us on down to Sacramento.
Oh,
and
cool.
They were fine with that.
Uh-huh.
You got a whole parking lot of people exiting, so there's a lot of options. And so we just talked to people and pick who was going close to where we lived.
So this was when you were like junior or senior in high school?
Yeah, it was probably a junior in high school.
Okay. All right. And, let's go back a little bit. In your grade school, did you read a lot? Did you like reading? Did you like math? Did you like sciences?
None of that. I didn't care to read. I still don't care to read, except when I've traveled. I was definitely a voracious reader, but I didn't care too much about it back then.
Okay.
Nor science wasn't something I hated at all. I liked it all, but it wasn't like I'm going to be a scientist or I'm really grabbed by this or whatever.
Okay.
It was mostly I spent a lot. So many years were in the scouting. So many years were in camping and fires and crawling over mountains and stuff that I wasn't really. I was going to school for certain reasons, but. I was more outdoors my whole life, so it kind of led me, you know, if your question's about, you know, that kind of schooling and so forth, I did it all, and I was a good student and so forth, but I was too inbred in the whole outdoor world, so it worked out later on.
Your home in Sacramento, was it close enough to allow you to, you on your bike or on foot, to head out of town into the forests that, you know, the surrounding areas?
No, the closest we would bike typically at the most would be into the foothills. I was in dead center Sacramento. So anything that was done, and we rode our bikes a lot, but that wouldn't be something generally that you would head up into the hills or whatever. Somebody would have a car and we would have, actually that's the most time, independent of scouting and so forth, was all the river running and stuff, and the friends had trucks or cars and so forth, and they were all super into it, and so I got gathered up into that group. And
okay.
So any of the mountain stuff was done with our trucks and cars and
high school.
Spontaneous.
This is high school time. Okay.
All high school.
So let's start into high school then. You mentioned that you completed your Eagle Scout. What did you do that in? What was your project?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, are you an Eagle Scout, or do you know anything about it?
No, I know a little bit about it. I know that in theory, to get that badge, you have to do some sort of meritorious service project, do something for somebody. What did you do?
Yeah, thinking back, there were like four or five different things that you had to commit to. Of some nature, and tell you the truth, I don't remember what those things were, but I knew that those were things that I had to get checked off, and then we would go through it all when the master of all this thing would sit you down and get ready to give you your Eagle Scout stuff. And,
right.
It was pretty cool. Okay. It was kind of a big deal for anybody that got that far, and then
it was.
The adults that were a part of it at that era, which was big time. Scouting and all this stuff. Post-war guys were helping, and it wasn't militaristic, but you could feel the sense of these men that had been through World War II, and they were having families, and here we were in the scouting, and that kind of, I think, reminded them of what it was like to go through their training.
Interesting.
Very interesting, yeah, thinking back on it. But, yeah, I couldn't tell you what a main thing that I went through. I don't recollect what that three or four or five things that I had to qualify for, outside of getting all your merit badges and all the standard stuff.
Right.
So I can't. That's all I know on that.
Okay.
Really.
So
I got a big axe that I still have. They gave me an axe that was part of the official thing with this group. Anyway, it was, you got a nice axe, and actually, amazing enough, that thing has stayed with me in all my moves and all my Grand Canyon time and everywhere. That axe, not because of the Eagle Scout, but I should bring that axe. I could use that somewhere.
Huh, how cool is that?
Interesting.
Well,
yeah.
It's fun. Huh.
Pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I always think of it when I grab it, I touch it, use it, cut logs or whatever I'm cutting with it, and I go, guys, this stayed with me a long time back from getting it in my Eagle Scout days.
That's
kind of a touchstone. Anyway, interesting.
It'd be 60 years, well, not quite.
Oh, long time
50,
ago.
50 years, you know.
50 years
55,
plus.
Yeah, plus. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Huh. So you mentioned river running a couple times. That sounds like this started in high school.
Oh yeah.
Can you tell me, you know, how did that all come about? What was your first river trip? Who'd you boat with? Where'd you go? How'd you hear about this?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking of myself when it was all happening to me. It was kind of like, why, and I'm in college now. I can start in high school, and then it goes quickly into the community college at Sacramento City College. But I knew these guys, go back to the Dubois, Mark and Gary, and they loved to spelunk. And I think they may have already started guiding with ARTA, which is out of Oakland, California. And they all might have, in their own way, started, because there were no boatmen anywhere to be used. But boatmen didn't exist at that period of time. And the fact that...
This was 1965?
Let me think.
You were being 15?
I graduated in 68. It was probably even 65 or 6, something like that.
Okay.
And so we... they wanted to go, and they had access to boats, from friends of theirs that were into it as well as their own outfitters, not ARTA, but they had gear, and it was like I'd landed on the moon. I didn't know what the heck, going rafting down rivers, I don't get it. You know, I said, no, we're going to use the boats to get to these caves, and we've got all the spelunking equipment, and we've found caves, and we either rappel down into them, or they're known caves that have kind of, you can get into them and crawl around, and all these passageways, and that's what the Dubois were really into, and the boats were really a way to easily get into the Stanislaus area, which was a limestone with tons and tons of caves, and to go and explore. Sometimes we would go to specific ones, and other times we would, I would direct none of this stuff. They'd say, I think there might be some caves over in this area, and so we'd go up and down the mountainsides, peeking behind boulders and rocks. I mean, it's not uncommon, you know, whether it's the papers that they found in Israel or wherever, the Dead Sea Scrolls and all that, just moving a rock and, there's a hole here. Hmm. And that's kind of what it was like for the exploring that we did. It was kind of like, there might be something up here or whatever. Let's go
climb up. Had you done any caving before?
No.
So you just hanging out with these guys. Did you have a little carbide lantern, a little flashlight? What did they give you for light?
Old carbide lanterns.
Okay.
The carbides, and they showed me, you know, how they do it, and they would strike the flint on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, all old-fashioned, and the water into the carbide, and the gas would come up. And then I think we would have backup flashlights, but mainly it was the carbide lanterns that we used. And we would, if it was necessary, to rappel down into a deep cave that was vertical as well as horizontal, that we would go down into these things and take a, and I was, you know, I felt like I should drop a string from the opening of the cave to wherever we ended and follow that back. But, man, it's, you're crawling on your stomach and there's stalactites and there's really interesting stuff in caves and sometimes pools of water. But yeah, it was like, you know, if they dropped me off and left me inside of this thing, I would have never figured out how to get out of them. you could go so far in the dark, and you could, we had helmets too, because you're always bumping your head in these caves. And but anyway, we all stayed together, and we had turned all the lights off and sit there and feel what it's like to be that far down and in the black and no noise. So anyway, that was the start of it all was because of that. And then it migrated over to like, well, we've got to get these, we use the boats to do this. And they said to me, essentially, you know, why don't you, you know, row some, if you want to row some, yeah, we'll show you what's going on, so, and how to read water.
So Scott, hang on a second. So these caves on the Stanislaus River, can you tell me a little bit more about this geographical area? Where did you put in on that first trip to go caving with a boat? And where did you take out? Do you remember?
Yeah. The put-ins were at, God, I think it's Cache Bar. It's still used. I mean, they've dammed it up. So if there's enough water, I'm sure guys still can go down it, but basically not because the dam is there and they've shut off all the water. Let's see, the takeout, I keep mixing up Grand Canyon with this stuff. Lee's Ferry, no, not that. It's not
it wasn't Diamond Creek. We didn't take out on Stanislaus at Diamond Creek. No.
Yeah, no, yeah. Oh, we went all the way across the lake. That's what we did. Oh, yeah. No. The put-ins were, there was a spillway way up on top that had a reservoir, I believe, on the Stanislaus River.
Okay.
And there was a bridge in there to get across the Stanislaus, but it didn't really go anywhere. I went to a campground, I think is about all it did. But, God, I wish I could tell you what I remember from that put-in and the takeout sites. If I was not on the phone, I could probably go, oh, yeah, that's what it was, you know,
yeah,
which I'll remember.
And this was before the Stanislaus was dammed, is that right?
Absolutely. This was free-flowing.
So I need you to stop for a minute and just sit back and tell me everything you remember about running that river before the dam.
The running before the dam, for me, let's say this is 66, something like that. The biggest thing was that there was basically nobody knew, for one thing, anything about river running and rowing boats and how to get into that stuff. The people we would see there, and we'd bring all our gear up. This is before commercial stuff, really. It's just us having fun. And we knew how to row, and we knew how to get our boats down safely and all this stuff. And what we would see is people showing up with cases of beer and coolers thrown into, like, little yellow duckies, and they would be going out on this flooding river, or not flooding, but anyway, it's technical enough that you just looked at them and go, you guys aren't going to make it. Do you know what you're getting into? And there was a lot of that. That's the period piece that we're talking about, is that we're looking around and going, well, here, we've got these old World War II boats that were still sturdy and so forth, and the 10-man rafts are what probably all the river businesses started with.
That weighed a lot.
They were heavy, but I don't, you know, everything in river running always seemed heavy to me, man.
And were these paddle boats? Were you paddling them?
No, we rode them. We rode them.
What kind of frames did you have?
They were generally handmade with wood, or if somebody could weld, then they welded the frames up at home.
Okay.
And it was all made up, everything.
Right.
There was absolutely nothing. There wasn't an REI store or anything. You couldn't buy anything.
Right.
And I don't even know how oars were found. And when I ordered oars for the M&A work I did, they came from the East Coast, and they were shipped out, and there was nobody else that had oars.
Huh.
You know, they were nice ash oars.
Uh-huh.
Still, when I was at M&A back in the 60s, early 70s, none of that stuff was available. So you go back into my time in 66, there weren't rafting equipment, non-existent, nothing. Waterproof bags, non-existent, other than whatever commercial stores you could go to, the surplus stores.
Military surplus?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the common place and only place if you wanted like a backpack or you wanted anything that might be waterproof or all the military cans that we put all of our food into or our personal bags, all that stuff. And they were all, you know, for machine gun bullets and so forth, our ammo boxes. And what if you floated anywhere, then ammo boxes is what you kept your personal stuff in, and food went into the big clip-down boxes that were waterproof.
Generator boxes?
All that kind of stuff, yeah.
Okay. And then for the river itself, well, hang on. Let's just finish up with the boats here. So the wooden frames, handmade wooden frames.
Handmade wooden frames, and some of them were welded, and that's when I made my own stuff. I figured out how to weld and took some classes in welding because I wanted to make stuff as well. And so I made my own frames. It wasn't uncommon for people. There was nothing out there. So you just had to engineer what you thought worked, and you made it.
Okay.
And then you went out on the river and tried it.
And then how did you attach the frames to the rafts? Had D-rings on patches come along?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were, not that they came along, but those were on the military boats.
Ah.
Those kind of things. So you could tie into them, and some of the boats were so fresh off the war that there were like pockets with flares and repair equipment in them.
Huh.
And
brand new.
That was pretty interesting. Yeah, it was neat. And then some of them, well, later on into Grand Canyon, the boats we picked up, the pontoons that you make for bridges in war, and Russia does it
similar right
now. And so that's what made all the Grand Canyon boats ultimately, but that's down the line. Now,
right. Let's hold off on that for a minute. And the Stanislaus, now your eyebrows are up when you're looking at the people that have showed up in little yellow pool toys with their beer.
Yes.
Describe to me the river. Is this, Steep Creek, California, read and run, back pedal, head to the right, pull left, busy river?
Very, very active, and it's a great, the biggest asset the Stanislaus had was it was only, like we would go up, if we were hanging out in Sacramento in the night or whatever, and we go, where do you want to go? What do you mean? It's night, we're ready to go to bed. He says, no, let's go up to the South Fork American, which was close, and the Stanislaus, which was close. It was less than an hour to drive there, and we would just throw our gear into a truck and our station wagon or whatever and just go up to these places. So the Stan and the South Fork, Tuolumne hadn't been found yet, and the rivers were all very technical, depending on what kind of flows they had. But generally, it was a lot of rock dodging and holes and getting away from situations. It was a great learning ground for anybody that was going to get into the rowing. It was perfect for moving from there up to Idaho or more heavy places. It was a great learning ground, Stan and South Fork. And
did you have life jackets? Was that did somebody say you needed those things?
I get sent a bunch of pictures, periodically, and I go, wow, we don't have any life jackets on. I think we might have thrown one in or on, but nobody, even in Idaho in the beginnings, and Grand in a certain respect, life jackets were there, but, we didn't think much about it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Where did you learn to swim?
Oh, in Sacramento, and of course that was a part of scouting, was you had to get merit badges in swimming and swim a mile, and so swimming was all in Sacramento, and we had a pool, near where we lived. So, yeah, you had to learn how to swim. So the swimming was done as a scouting venture. And
now you're in Sacramento, so that's more inland. Did you get into surfing at all? Is that something you went out and played around with?
Well, the surfing's a big part of my life currently, and the surf, the scouts, again, this is another a benefit from that is that we go to Dillon's Beach. You probably don't know these things I'll talk about.
No.
Dillon's Beach is due west from Sacramento. It takes a few hours to get there, but that was a great place for the scouting groups to go and camp in the sand dunes and see what that was like. And the ocean was just over another sand dune,
oh,
so
wow.
We were kind of protected from wind. But they were mountainous sand dunes, and we all got to thinking, you know, God, there's got to be a way we can take, you know, boards up. Next time we come, we're going to bring this, or we're going to bring inner tubes, and we'd crawl up the top of these high, high sand dunes and take boards like we were skating or surfing down these things.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really phenomenal.
Sort of like sand skiing.
Totally. You've seen it. I mean, it does exist, you know, in sand dune areas, people playing with that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what we as boys were just going, God, or we had just rolled down them. It was great.
Mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
was steep, and they were tall, and it was glorious. And then once we're done with that, we would go out into the ocean and play around and bring inner tubes or belly inflatable kind of things, and we would use those to catch waves and surf to shore on them. The magazines that were coming out there about surfing, I was captivated by that and what we had done with the sand dunes and so forth. And I saw what they were doing, and I go, you know, that was like a spiritual event and moment, was to like look at these magazines and picture Santa Cruz, for one thing specifically. There's a lot of surfing in the past and now. And I go, you know, I want to do that. That's what I really want to do.
Huh.
Well, it took me, and here I am doing all this rafting at the time. I'm all over on different rivers, rowing boats, and, you know, starting to get paid for some of this stuff. And then this is going to push this way forward on our discussion. But I never forgot, kind of like my little act from the Eagle Scouts, that I never forgot where that came from, nor did I ever forget the magazines with the surf pictures and going down those sand dunes and trying to bring an item that would go faster down these sand dunes and experience this whole stuff. And so I was sitting on my boat with my friend on my last trip in the Grand Canyon for the season, and we were sitting on the ends of our boat, and I said, so what are we going to do now? We're ready to get out of the rafting business and all this. We were getting older, but it was kind of repetitive, and we didn't want to spend all this time down in the canyon forever and ever. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to move to Santa Cruz, and I'm going to surf. I'm going to surf until I never surf ever again, you know, or whatever. That's it. This is my decision. I'm leaving all this, and I'm going to go learn how to surf, which took living in Santa Cruz specifically. Then my friend said, you know, I'm going to make a decision right now to a commitment. And he says, I'm going to go to medical school, and that's what I've wanted to do. My dad's a doctor.
Wow.
And he said, you know, I've always, my whole life, and he wasn't from the West Coast, from the East, and he said, I always wanted to surf, you know. And I said, me too, you know. And I think now is the time. I'm ready to leave, which I didn't completely leave, but I left Flagstaff, and I left the business for a little bit. And I went to Santa Cruz and started at the age of 30. I moved there, and I had done a little surfing, but never like what it becomes.
Okay.
And so anyway,
yeah.
That's what brought me there. And
all
I
right,
love
so I just wanted a date stamp on that. You gave that to me, 1980. All right, so now we're going to run back back to high school. I'm not ready to head off to college just yet.
Go ahead.
So was it fair to say in your sophomore year you started hanging out with the Dubois and started in caving? Is that?
Oh yeah, I would say, what year did you call?
Sophomore.
Sophomore.
65-ish, 66-ish.
Yeah, I would say it's very close to that. Yeah. Yeah. 65, 66. Yeah, I would have made my friends at that point probably through either football or some other sporting events or swim team, whatever. But
Were you in sports in high school?
Oh, yeah. I played baseball, football, and swim team for my 3 years in high school.
And did you letter?
Did I what?
Did you letter on the team? Don't you get a letter if you're on the team?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, we were always first. I was on the diving team, and they wanted me to swim because I could do both at the same time. Like you go to an event for high school, and you could dive as well as swim. And
oh, wow.
No, I'm not gonna swim, which took a ton of energy. Those guys worked out like soccer players, man.
Yep.
It was brutal. And I said, no, that'll take too much away from me from diving. So, but anyway, yeah, we would always get first place. And we were a big school.
Wow.
Several thousand students at our school, our high school.
So first place meaning you took state.
We took state in baseball, and we took state in football, and we took state in swimming.
Holy cow, and what a powerhouse. That's just amazing.
Yeah, this school at that specific time was just heroic. I mean, it was, and I think we would have been basketball, except at the final determining game, we lost, and that would have put all of the major sports as state, top state competitors of all of California. So that was pretty exciting. That was good.
That's amazing. I mean, that's amazing coaching going on there.
Absolutely. And it was just a great, phenomenal luckout. And now I've gone through four boys in my family, and I've gone to a lot of sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
And to think back on my time, there was just a lot of great guys, and Sacramento was a big place for sports. A lot of support. You know, everybody played Little League. Everybody played American Legion ball. Everybody did everything for years. So then they move into high school, and they're already groomed, and you got all this talent ready to go. And that's what happened. They were all, and a few of my football friends went pro, and then a few of my baseball friends went pro and made it to World Series.
Oh, wow.
I got to watch them play on TV. And so the guys that shined in our high school and the Little League, you know, they, if you thought they were something then, it was like, oh, these guys are good. These guys have got it. You know, to get to see that and be around people and play against and with these guys and to go, yeah, he's got it. You know, that was a real eye opener. That was a good learning experience to see what real quality, and people just have it. They really have it. And so they made it, and they made it as far as they cared to go, I guess.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, eventually you time out with age, as do we all from everything.
Yeah.
But
totally.
It's a young man's game. When you're good at it, you know, more power to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And you make it into the pros, then you're only good as long as you're, you know, used, you know, whether you're a football player getting beat up or
that's right.
your
that's
arms
right.
in baseball.
Yep. Yep. So I'm going to assume here, you're going to set me straight if I'm out of line, that the discussions with your parents in high school went, Scott, when you go to college, blah, blah, blah. Was it expected by your parents that you were going to go to college, or was that something you wanted to do? Was that self-driven? How did that, as you were starting to River Run and you were doing all the sports stuff in high school, what was happening college-wise?
Oh, college-wise, my parents would never do anything like that. Everything was, you know, it was my life, and they never, ever put boundaries on anything I did.
Okay.
Any wild stuff that I was into, and they were very forgiving. I was building rafts inside of our dining area. I was all over the place in that house in the backyard. And it started to, the river running stuff started to pile up boat-wise and oar-wise and frame-wise and finding a surplus store with this and getting it and, oh, this will be good for this trip. They put up with a lot willingly, and they let everything. There was no, you can't do this or that. And I did a lot of great stuff.
So were your folks like, well, you know, if you want to go to college, that's fine. If you want to, you know, go boat on the river, you know, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
Okay.
But I had my interest in going. I wanted to go, since I wasn't sure what was going on in my life, I go, well, the next thing is I was interested in filmmaking. So I went to the local really great college, Sacramento City College, and my rafting friends and from high school were going there. And so really going there and studying film and photography and so forth. They all were boating more heavily. Of course, we were all not mid-high school kids or young high school kids. We were now at City College, and it was getting more sophisticated, meaning...
So you had graduated from high school by then when you went to City College, or was this
68. 68 is when I graduated, and then I ended up over at Sacramento City College, and then over to State College.
Had you did you have a camera by then? Were you already taking pictures? Were you interested in film?
You know, any pictures I took were at the most were with a still camera. I had bought a camera then, but I don't think there was a waterproof way to take it on the rivers at that time.
Hmm.
And so it didn't really dawn on me in those early phases to do that. That's when I moved, when ARDA needed, they always needed people to row when nobody knew how to row. And they knew that I was with the Dubois and they were already being hired for guiding. And they knew that I was their friend and that they had been training me. And they said, Scott, you got to go to our training session in the spring, and then you'll be able to go right to work.
Okay, so hang on a second. Wait, let's go back for a minute.
You're good at keeping this on track.
Your first, I'm taking notes.
Good for you.
Your first river trip then on the Stanislaus going caving, I'm assuming you hadn't done a lot of caving before, if any, and hadn't been on a boat before, if ever. So it was mostly just hang on and do what you're told and follow these guys and hang out and have a good time. When did you first, say, hey, can I try rowing? Was that on that trip?
That all was going on as it was easy. There was usually two people per boat. We'd probably take a couple boats down, and they'd say, okay, this is a good section. When is your row? And I'll tell you, where your ferry angle should be and what rocks are going to, what current's going to do and so forth.
So this would have been one of the Dubois brothers
kind of
over your shoulder, ghost whispering, do this, do that, pull forward, pull back. Okay.
Yeah. And because ultimately it turned out that they were grooming me for unknowingly, but they were grooming me to be a part of the ARDA guide force. And after one of our little trips, Gary had to call. He said, Scott, I got to check in and call from Angels Camp, which is a mountain town, little town. And he says, I got to call ARDA and find out when I'm supposed to be in Oregon or where I'm supposed to be in the Grand and blah, blah. And so on that phone call, in a little booth in a quiet little town, he turns to me and said, I'm doing this. I'm going to Grand Canyon, this and that. And Rob Elliott or Lou wants to know if you want to go and guide in Idaho on the Middle Fork. And here, just like you had said, I'm getting little whispers of go left here, put this ferry angle here, pull back. I had done that, off and on for, a couple months with those guys. And then, so when I went to the training session with a lot of guides that ended up in Grand Canyon, all California guys, and ARDA put us for free through training, gave us black bags for our clothes, gave us ammo cans.
Okay, wait.
Put us to work.
Wait. What year was this?
That would have been probably, I went to Idaho. Okay, let's not forget that I went to the Grand in 72. So it would have been in the latter 60s.
So you had graduated from high school.
In 68.
And you were thinking, I'm going to get into film. And every now and then you'd, throw the boat in the truck and go out and go and go boating. But you were interested in a number of different things. And let's back up a minute. I forgot to ask you. Did you do any summer jobs or jobs when you were in high school?
No, not really. I worked for my dad in the pharmacy, but that if there was something that came up that I should do with the scouting or any kind of a camping kind of thing, he let me do anything. So, but yeah, I worked for the pharmacy because it was a family business.
And where did you learn to drive?
I learned to drive in Sacramento, and driving at that time, I think if there was a business, that you were a part of, family business specifically. You could drive legally at 14.
Okay.
So my dad would take me like any dad would take their kids into parking lots, and mm-hmm. we drove and drove and drove. And then finally, I went and got my license at 14 and started delivering medicine to people and doing this and that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's how all that worked out. And so it was exactly what the law was written for, was that, and it was actually had a lot more to do with farming mm-hmm. and ranching.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And
but this is very cool because back in the day, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, Walgreens of today, they will not deliver. But back in the day, the personal, was your dad running his own personal pharmacy or was he working
yes.
a chain?
Yeah, he worked for a clinic that had doctors and so forth, and then stuff would be prescribed to people and they would go to the pharmacy. And but he got tired of the people running that, and he felt he should just do all of his pharmacy stuff on his own. So he got his own shop and store and everything and
wow.
and went okay. to work.
So and you, one of the things he could do for his clientele was actually have free delivery.
Absolutely.
And that was you in the car.
That was me in a car.
How cool is that?
On my bicycle. If the car wasn't available, which I think he'd organize, you know, the period of time when the car could go and deliver this to this and this. And then other times I was close enough from home to there to mm-hmm. ride a bike, and I would ride my bike over and then deliver on my bike. And then when the car time came, then I'd hop in the car and do okay. longer deliveries.
When did you buy your own car, your first car?
My first car...
or truck?
Yeah, my first car was a Austin Healey sports car. And I worked at a grocery store, which paid like probably less than probably 75 cents an hour or something like that. And I saved enough money to buy a sports car. And that was, gosh, that was right around the latter 60s somewhere. And I saved up enough money to buy that car.
I was thinking then, when you graduated from high school and then went to Sacramento.
The City College after.
Yeah, City College.
School.
Would that have been where that would happen somewhere?
For the car, it was, yeah, it was right close to that because I was in college. When I was at Sacramento City College, I had it kind of in the middle of all that. So it could have been 68 or 9, probably got that car.
Yeah.
If I graduated in 68.
So I've got to ask you, you've got boats in your dining room.
Yes.
Why? How are you going to get your boats in that little sports car?
Well, see, all this revolved around my ability to attach myself to people that had the boats, the trucks, the station wagons. That my entire life, other than when I finally bought my truck and I did this extensive trip to Panama from Sacramento, but I bought a truck and I could then roam around and do my part. But for all those years, it was people had all the other stuff. They had either boats, they had repair kits, they had cars, whether they were station wagons or trucks.
Did you guys have a station wagon? Did your folks have a wagon?
No. Okay. No, not our family.
Okay.
And we just had, regular four-seaters cars.
All right. Yeah, just trying to figure that out. So wait a minute. You're into stuff that needs big machines, and you've got this little sports car. Okay.
Yeah, no, the sports car was just a passion that I've got to this day of having sports cars. And so I had a couple of those, sold one thinking it was impractical. Like, didn't I make enough money to keep a car up of that value? So I sold it and later got another one.
And I do want to ask you about the times growing up in California in the late 60s. I'm thinking 68, mm-hmm. Chicago riots. I'm thinking the Vietnam mm-hmm. War. I'm thinking sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely.
And where were you at with all that?
I was in high school, then moving over to the City College. And I went to war marches in San Francisco at Golden Gate Park. I did staged.
And those would have been peace marches, I think they would have been called.
Yeah.
That. Okay.
Yeah. Peace marches in San Francisco at the Polo Grounds and wherever else. And in Sacramento at the City College, we closed down the college, of which I had only gone through about half of the school. And we as students in putting the war down and stop the war and so forth, we didn't close the university yet. I hadn't gone there, but I think we were very close to actually closing the university when I moved over to Sauk State. But we closed down the City College, and then we would block traffic out in front of the City College with banners and all this stuff. And so I was, you know, everybody was, it wasn't mm-hmm. just me, mm-hmm. it was everybody. Right. Anybody that was normal was out there doing stand up, you know, for peace and peace, love, and rock and roll, and drugs, and everything. So, mm-hmm.
so yeah. the people in those events, mm-hmm. were they people your age, or were there?
Yeah,
were there your,
all my age.
Not
and teachers sometimes too.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like we were in Russia where you get put in jail for demonstrating against things that were wrong. It was like, oh, we're in league. We shouldn't be in this war in the first place. Well, the war was taken all away. A lot of friends at my age, because I was right eligible age, but I got a high enough lottery number that I didn't get called up.
Okay.
That's how they were picking people.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, all that war stuff was, that was all mixed up with the time for pot and music and demonstrations and collective mind of all people of a certain age, very specific ages, actually. If you were like, not like me, 16, 17, 18, 19, if you were like 22, 3, 4, 5, you were in a different era. That was a different era of guys that were more, you know, we believe in this war and we're going to do this and it's really wrong and smoking pot is bad and on, you know. So that was very
interesting.
Specific, very specific time.
Huh.
And you were either in that age, and it wasn't many years, and I could be in high school being a senior and or whatever, and there were guys that were older than me. I'm still just a pup. I'm graduating at 17 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely a division, a dividing line between people that were sophomores and those that were seniors. The war was going on. Don't demonstrate. Drugs were non-existent. That's bad. And we were a group that was like listening to the Dead and Jimi Hendrix and going to concerts constantly in San Francisco or in town. So, and people that were only a few more years older than we were, they weren't in it. They were out in their 57 Chevys souped up, dragging down streets. And, you know, that was all part of my time too. And how old, Tom, are you? How old are you?
I'm 5 years your junior.
Oh, so you're younger. You're back in another different era, for sure. But, you know, you're old enough to remember some of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Got a taste of all that. But it was like a...
But I had not been aware of this bright line between where you were and where the kids just older than you were.
Absolutely.
Well, young men, young women, but wow.
Yeah. My brothers were older by a few years than me. They could have been on the moon. And all that group at that age period, they were not in our class of mind at all.
Huh.
Not at all. And they were through it. They were in it. But it wasn't something they could relate to, I guess. They would never try pot, or they wouldn't go to a psychedelic, you know, concert of some nature. It was mm-hmm. just like, no, we don't do that.
Huh.
We're thinking about going to college and getting jobs, I guess.
Right.
But we were all about sex, love, and rock and roll. So that was real.
I want to back up a minute because you said something about your parents, which I found really interesting, which was that they never would have told you, Scott, we want you to be a pharmacist like your father, and this is a good, you know, pharmacy school here, university of blah, 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 going to get a degree and do the family proud.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't doing that. What was it about your parents that had them in that mindset that we're going to create these children and we're going to leash them on the world to do their best.
Yeah. I think they were just, you know, now that I've got four boys that are grown,
mm-hmm.
but I gathered that concept. I lived by that. I said, I just felt like I had no right to direct you. I can give you recommendations and some wisdom, but, you know, kids as they grow up, they don't want to listen as well. But my parents were, God, I did stuff, you know, like when I'd go to concerts on the West Coast back in the 60s, I'd have my mom drop me off at the freeway on-ramp, and I'd said, I'll be back. No cell phones or anything like that.
Mm-hmm, it's all mm-hmm, right.
Cell phones and all that. So I'd say, oh, just drop me off, and I'll be back either tomorrow or whatever. I'll give you a call from somewhere, and I'll take a bus home, or I'll tell you where I am. You can pick me up. But, you know, I did a lot of stuff like
that's
that.
That's just so cool from your for your parents to, you know, swallow hard and let you out of the car and drive away.
Yeah, and they let me out. And that happened all the time for me because hitchhiking was a very easy and accepted and done thing all over the place. And I hitchhiked everywhere. If I had to go to, like I said, up into the Sierras for skiing or hikes or whatever, or go to the West Coast and go to the beach or go to Sausalito, any of these places, you know, you could easily hitchhike places, and you could ask people, oh, it'd be better if you dropped me off at this off-ramp, on-ramp, whatever, because this is more busy, and they go, oh, yeah, we'll drop you off over here.
Right.
And,
Yeah.
And a funny thing, along those lines of parents, they dropped my friend and I off in Sacramento, and I said, we're going to San Francisco to a concert. And this is right in the middle of Haight-Ashbury, solidly in the middle of Haight-Ashbury. And all that, all the drugs and everything was omnipresent. And so they said, okay, we'll take you down to which one do you want, blah, 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 drop me off. So we hitchhike into San Francisco, which on our own, we had been with parents, but not on our own, trying to get around a big city and find a place to stay. So we finally found a YMCA, or a cop directed us to a YMCA. And that's where we spent the night. We walked in with our backpacks and whatever for the concerts. And we paid like a dollar and we signed in. And then they had to call around and make sure we weren't runaways and get the police to check us out and all this. And then they said, okay, this is where you'll sleep, you know. And we closed the doors at X hour and said, okay, fine. So then we went to the Avalon Ballroom and listened to Jefferson Airplane and a whole bunch of other bands. And then we found our way back to the YMCA and it was unlocked we hit a buzzer and they let us in. We went to sleep. Next day, hitchhiked up north to more coastal towns and found rides finally to work our way back, you know, 140 miles to Sacramento after having a weekend's open-ended adventure.
And this would have been 68?
Yeah, 68.
Okay.
68.
Wow.
Definitely 67, 68. And it all started with mom and dad saying, okay, we'll drop you off and give us a call if you need a ride. But it was, I mean, can you imagine sending your kids 100 and some miles to a major city with, we have very little money. We had almost nothing. But I think we got fed at the YMCA. And we hardly had anything, and we didn't expect to have anything. And people treated us, you know, nice, give you rides and list places.
Right.
It's pretty cool. It was a great time.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Huh. Scott,
yeah,
we've been yik-yakking here for a little over an hour. Maybe this is a good time to put a comma in this interview series.
Sure.
And we'll pick this up again next time. As we close down this interview, part one here, is there anything in the material that we've covered that I didn't ask you that you're thinking, oh, he didn't ask me about XYZ and I wanted to mention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spent so much time on my young years. My notes were for Grand Canyon.
We're getting there.
Stuff there.
It's coming
up.
Don't. I just want to make sure that in the groundwork we've covered, You know, Aunt Lucy was an axe murderer, and now's the time to bring her in, because I didn't ask you about Aunt Lucy.
Yeah, right. Gotcha.
If there's anything in this, you know, from the first sort of 15, 16 years of your life, anything else to bring in?
We covered the Dubois were a big part of what happened to me to get me started on the rivers.
I'm gonna start with them when we start our next because I want to go back to that phone call where one of them says, "Hey, you know, they're asking for you."
That was the start of big time for me. That was like joining the big leagues when that call came in. It was so wild to be in this enclosed phone booth with a pile of nickels and dimes to keep the phone running. And then to have Gary turn to me and he says, "Lou and Rob want to know if you want to go to Idaho."
Okay, let's pick up there next time. But for now, I think let's go ahead and conclude part one of Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Scott Imslin. Today is Monday, February 20th, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Scott, thank you so very much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. It's been interesting.